Going to be back in talking about Hudson Taylor today, as you see on the screen behind me. So let's look to the Lord and commit our day unto Him. Our Father in heaven, we thank Thee for this day that we have in our week to gather together. We thank Thee for the Sabbath, the Lord's Day. We thank Thee for our church family. We commit our gatherings to Thee now. We commit the whole day to Thee. We pray that we would live singularly today, that it would be a day of rest for our souls, a day of feeding on Your faithfulness, a day where we delight ourselves in fatness and in the good things, and we look to Thee to feed us as we've gathered together and to bless our worship and all the means of grace to us, that we might grow and be strengthened, that the Lord Jesus might be magnified. And we ask this in Jesus' name. Amen. So we are looking together at Hudson Taylor still, talking about pioneer missions in China. I just noticed that my slideshow didn't update from this morning. I had another slide in between here. Well, Let me just close it out and put it back on here. Maybe it'll update for me. There it is. Yes, good. Okay. So, we have for 5 weeks been talking about the early days of a Christian ministry in China. And last week we were talking about the establishment of the China Inland Mission underneath Hudson Taylor in the 1860s, and how Hudson Taylor, and here's a picture of he and his wife around the time of the founding of the China Inland Mission in 1865, and the Lammermuir Party, which came out, which was the first group of missionaries underneath his new organization. And then we took a little excursus and talked about some things going on outside of Hudson Taylor's circle that were going on at the same time in China. And so I talked to you about William Chalmers Burns, and I talked to you about David Hill, the missionary who sponsored the essay contest where the Confucius scholar Zhi Sengmo was converted, and Zhi became Pastor Zhi, and was a greatly used of the Lord as a pastor and a counselor, as really a leader in northern China, establishing clinics for opium addicts and writing hymns. When you read the rest of the literature from China Inland Mission and other just missions for the next 100 years, you often hear them talking about singing Pastor Zhi's hymns. So just this week, I was reading another biography that I found on James Frazier. And James Frazier, we'll talk about in a few weeks, he was early 1900s. And he was in the mountain range that borders China and Burma, so the Himalayas almost, 10,000 feet up with Aboriginal tribes up there. And he's teaching them Pastor Zhi's hymns that were written, 40, 50 years previous to his ministry. So we talked about those things. So today I want to circle back then and talk some more about just Hudson Taylor, the establishment of the China Inland Mission, and the organization of it, and then some happenings that occurred in the 1880s. And so let me read to you from Hudson Taylor's own reflections on the establishment of the CIM. Maybe you remember the circumstances. He and his wife, Maria, had returned home to England for him to do a couple things. First of all, to finish his medical degree, which he had not finished when he went to Shanghai the first time, and then to work on a translation in a dialect in Ningpo, where they were ministering. And so here is in his own words, on Sunday, June 25th, 1865, unable to bear the sight of a congregation of 1,000 Christian people rejoicing in their own security while millions were perishing for lack of knowledge, I wandered out on the sands alone in great spiritual agony. He was at Brighton at this point, and Brighton is on the coast. So he was on Brighton Beach. And there the Lord conquered my unbelief, and I surrendered myself to God for His service. I told Him that all the responsibility as to the issues and consequences must rest with Him, that as His servant it was mine to obey and to follow Him, His to direct, to care for, and to guide me, and those who might labor with me. Need I say that peace at once flowed into my burdened heart? Then and there, I asked Him for 24 workers, 2 for each of 11 island provinces which were without a missionary, and 2 for Mongolia. And writing the petition on the margin of the Bible I had with me, I returned home with a heart enjoying much rest, rest that had been stranger to me for months. Taylor was 33 years old at that moment in his life when he began praying specifically for 24 workers. And that really has been one of the things that's been remarkable as I've read through these biographies and stories of the work in China and other places too, the specificity of their praying. 24. Why not 30? Why not give me as many as you can give me, as many as I can handle? I mean, 24. He prays for 24. And a year later, there's the result of his prayers. There are 16 adults, and there are 4 children in that picture. So there's 20 and the Lammermuir party. And then there were 5 that had already left for China and were in various stations, people he had met in his previous travels in China that wanted to be associated with him. And so he prayed for 24 and he got 25, including himself, 25. That party sails in 1866 in that area. And as the years went on, the Lord impressed him at various stages to pray for more workers. So in 1881, the Lord moved Hudson Taylor to begin to pray for 70 workers. For 70 workers in a 3-year time frame. And so in 1881, he began to pray very specifically that by 1884, the Lord would give him 70 workers. And by 1884, the Lord gave 76. A few years later, a couple of years later, 1886, he begins to pray for 100. The Lord gives him faith to pray for 100. And he begins to pray specifically for 100. And a year later, he had 102 new missionaries. It's a really remarkable element of Christian experience that I recognize that I personally have not come to the level of. There's a chapter, and we'll talk about this when we get to James Frazier. But James Frazier, in his biography by Geraldine Taylor, there's a chapter that's all in his own words. And it's called The Prayer of Faith, where he explains some of these things about specificity in prayer and praying very specifically for things that the Lord gives you faith to pray for. And he would answer that with, you know, we see 70. Why not 75? Why not 80? Well, the Lord didn't give me faith for 80. The Lord gave me faith for 70, is what he would say. And so there's a subjective element to that, I realize, but there was something real about the prayer life and the faith of these men. So, I mean, you think about that, remarkable growth. So in 20 years, there's 200 missionaries in the China Inland Mission under the direction of Hudson Taylor. And remember, they're not doing the normal route of going on deputation, earning pledged support, right? They're just going. And the money will come in George Mueller style. So there's got to be an organization on the home front supporting this. And so I want to talk to you about 3 individuals on the home front of people that were involved with Hudson Taylor in the beginnings of China Inland Mission here. So well, the first couple here, this is William Thomas Berger and his wife. William Berger met Hudson Taylor before he ever went to China when Hudson Taylor was studying studying medicine in London. He associated with some Methodists in London, and William Berger was in that group. William Berger was a wealthy merchant in China. He was the owner of a rice starch manufacturing company and independently wealthy from inherited wealth and his own business transactions. And so he befriended Taylor, corresponded with him in those early years of discouragement. And when the CES, when the China Evangelistic Society, proved itself to be inept, and Hudson Taylor finally broke ties with them, William Berger promised his financial support. And he was the one who stood behind the early days of the CIM with his own wealth and his own network of friends and business acumen. And he was the director, he was the home director of the China Inland Mission. So his duties included things like correspondence and accounting, decisions about recruits who are come and surrendering to the field, and whether they are called or not, whether they're a good fit or not. He edited the monthly magazine as well. And all of that took place from his estate, which was south of the city of London. A vast estate, which unfortunately now is the world headquarters of the Scientology cult. So, in fact, it was a few years ago that Tom Cruise, who's probably the most famous Scientology guy, or the actor, how he gave a large sum of money for the rehabilitation of that estate to make it into the world headquarters for Scientology. So William Berger's home is now being used to promulgate a false religion. But that gives you a scope and the size of, you know, the kind of property we're talking about and the kind of house we're talking about, the kind of wealth this man had. So William Berger, close friends with the Taylors, financially backing a lot of those early endeavors. Then you had this man, Henry Grattan Guinness. Henry Grattan Guinness, he's from Ireland, from Dublin, Ireland. And he was an itinerant evangelist in the 1830s and 40s, 50s in that area, and was wildly popular as an itinerant evangelist in those days. He was influential in the Ulster Revival of 1859. I don't know if you've heard of that, but there was a tremendous awakening in 1859 in Northern Ireland, in Ulster, and he was very influential in those circles. He eventually became very well known for his speaking on eschatology and was an early harbinger of dispensational premillennialism. But he befriended Hudson Taylor in the 1850s, 1860, when Hudson Taylor was home for that little break. And he volunteered to be a missionary in China. And Hudson Taylor talked him out of it because he was already at that point, you know, in his 40s, early 50s. He thought the language was going to be too much of a barrier at that point in his life. He says, why don't you harness your own, it's a bad word to use, but your own popularity, your name in the churches here. Why don't you harness that for the glory of God? And so what Guinness ended up doing was establishing a training institute in East London. East London, the poor part of London, where Spurgeon operated. And in fact, Guinness was a member of the Metropolitan Tabernacle under Spurgeon. Guinness started a training institute so that there was a place for these missionaries who were surrendered to the call could go for training. And the training was at his own home. He was able to purchase through gifts and such a large home, but in the middle of East London. It had a courtyard, and it had a front house and a back house and a courtyard in the middle. And so Guinness trains a lot of these missionaries for a one-year course of study out of his home. His children become influential in the CIM as well. Guinness's daughter, Geraldine, marries Hudson Taylor's son, Howard, and becomes the famous Mrs. Howard Taylor, Geraldine Taylor, the biographer of, and really the famous authoress of all of the early days of the China Inland Mission, the biographer of her father-in-law, Hudson Taylor. So he and the Taylors were very close, family connection, marriage connections. And then the third group is this family, the Broomall family, Benjamin and Amelia Broomall. So this here, Amelia Broomall, this is Hudson Taylor's sister. You remember the story of Hudson Taylor's conversion, when his younger sister has pledged that she will pray daily for his conversion, and a month later the Lord answers that prayer. She was a godly young lady. She was very close to Hudson. I mean, the two of them, as brother and sister, are remarkably close, writing letters daily when Hudson Taylor was initially in China. And he just everything we know from Hudson Taylor's early years in China and his discouragements comes from out the pouring out of his heart to his sister in those letters that he wrote. They were so close, very, very close. She marries Benjamin Broomall, who was a friend of Hudson's and was studying business in his early 20s. And the Lord blesses them with 10 children. This is their longtime maid that lived in their house with them, but the rest are their children, Amelia and Benjamin and Amelia Broomall. Eventually, the Broomalls moved into the mission headquarters in London, and they ran the headquarters. So when the mission headquarters moved from the Berger estate to London, Broomalls moved in, and they just ran hospitality for the mission and all the comings and goings of missionaries to and from London. They were in charge of the daily prayer meeting that was established there as well, and for correspondence for the mission. Benjamin Broomall became the great champion of the anti-opium cause. So think of him as a counterpart to William Wilberforce. You think of William Wilberforce and the great champion of anti-slavery. Benjamin Broomall is the great champion of anti-opium. And just like Wilberforce, there was a law passed more or less when Benjamin Broomall was on his deathbed to make the trade of opium illegal. It took that long for England to wake up to that atrocity. He was a great champion for that. Amelia was known preeminently as a prayer warrior. She was a woman of prayer. She wrote a little booklet. I have looked and looked and looked and looked for this booklet. I saw it mentioned in her biography, but I can't find the booklet anywhere. It's called Homely Hints to Mothers with Small Children. It's 24 pages long. I can only find one copy on planet Earth. It's never been digitized. It's never been OCR'd or anything like that. There's one copy in the British Library. So if any of you ever take a trip to England anytime soon, and we'll go to a certain branch of the British Library for me, and with your phone, take some pictures of the 24 pages of this book. I'd love to have it. I've seen extracts of it in her biography, and it looks tremendous. She was just a saint, just a real godly lady. Their son, okay, so Amelia and Benjamin's son, Marshall, became the second generation author of the CIM. Okay, so the first generation is Geraldine Taylor. The second generation is Marshall Broomall. And he writes dozens of books on the Lord's work in China. And then their grandson, A.J. Broomall, is the third generation author, historian of the CIM. And so a heavy, heavy influence on things. So the Bergers, the Guinnesses, and the Broomalls, all holding down the home front in this ministry in China. In the mid-1880s, when Hudson Taylor is praying for the 70, the Lord does a great work in Cambridge University. And there are these seven men, six of whom come out of Cambridge University, one comes out of the British Military Academy, that surrender for the foreign field. They're called the Cambridge Seven. And they're the last seven of the 70 that Hudson Taylor had been praying for. And their journey, remember Hudson Taylor had said, by 1884, give me 70. And they were the last of the 70. They were supposed to leave in 1884, but there was such a stir in England over these young men and their call to the field and their surrender to Christ that Hudson Taylor delayed their departure by a year so that they could do a farewell tour in the universities and colleges of England. And it was really a sweeping revival in 1885 under the influence of these seven young men, the Cambridge Seven. So I'll say a little bit about each of them. I'm going to go left to right here, top row and then bottom row. So on the upper left is Montagu Beauchamp. He was from Cambridge. He was a baronet. And so a baronet is one of the hereditary titles in England, similar to a knight, only it was hereditary. A knight is not hereditary. This is hereditary. You would address him by Sir Montagu Beauchamp, independently wealthy because of his hereditary title in England. He's at Cambridge, and he comes under the influence of Stanley Smith, Bod right below him, and is converted and surrenders to the field. And he's an Anglican. As you can imagine that a lot of these Cambridge Seven guys would be Anglicans because that's, you know, they're from the upper crust of English society. And he works with two of the others to establish a diocese in England, but an evangelical diocese. You know about the breadth of the Church of England in the 1800s, how you have some terrible parts that are almost Catholic. You have other parts like J.C. Ryle that are very good and evangelical, right? We're talking about the evangelical wing, the Ryle wing of Anglicanism here. So you have Beauchamp. The middle is the most famous of the Cambridge Seven, C.T. Studd. C.T. Studd was a famous cricket player, the most famous cricket player that England has ever produced. He was the great hero of the Ashes match against Australia in the early 1880s. He was the captain of the club. Think of him as the way you think of Honus Wagner in American culture. Okay, so you think about Honus Wagner, old baseball player, turn of the century, great baseball player, you know, on the lists of top 10 baseball players, you know, when people make top 10 lists, you understand that compared to today's players, he probably wouldn't have even made the team. There's just been an evolution in sports. But, you know, think of him like that, only in England. Okay? Big name, famous athlete. And he surrenders to the mission field with the China Inland Mission. C.T. Studd is very eccentric. And he ends up in China for 10 years, then in India for a decade, then in Central Africa for a decade. He's just all over the place and unsettled. That's C.T. Studd. Next to him is a William Cassels. So this guy. And William Cassels was ordained as the first bishop of northern China. Cassels and Polehill Turner and Beauchamp, the three Anglicans up here, they establish a diocese there that gets officially recognized by the crown. So Cassels comes home to England, is ordained and consecrated a bishop, and is the first bishop of northern China. Bottom row, bottom left, Stanley Smith. Stanley Smith's the leader of the group. He's the best preacher of the group when they go around. When they would go around, what would happen was, in these meetings, C.T. Studd would get up, and he was just an eccentric, energetic, I don't know, Billy Sunday type figure. Okay? So he's just all over the place, and of course he's the famous guy. Then the rest of them would give their personal testimonies. And then Stanley Smith would get up and he would preach. And Stanley Smith was the preacher, he was the expositor of the group, and he was the de facto leader of the seven. And he had been the captain rower of the Cambridge rowing team, which was a big deal, still is a big deal. I saw 250,000 people watch the Cambridge-Oxford boat race every year in England. So, but he was the captain of the row team that beat Oxford in the early 1880s, and so he was famous for that. Next to him is D.E. Haast. D.E. Haast was the one out of the seven that didn't go to Cambridge. He was in the Royal Military Academy. And again, in the way that England works with its hereditary nobility, his father was a major general, which means he was going to be a major general. Right? So that's how it works. It's not like here where it's you know, where it's based on merit, hopefully. So he was in line to be a major general. He was in the military academy, their you know, equivalent of West Point. And he comes out, and D.E. Haast is going to be a couple connections here with D.E. Haast. D.E. Haast, number one, was positioned by Hudson Taylor to be partner to Pastor Xi, because it took a very special kind of person to work with Pastor Xi. Pastor Xi was a tremendously gifted and strong personality, and for an English missionary to work with a gifted Chinese national like that took a lot of humility to let him lead. And Hudson Taylor saw that in Haast. So he worked with Xi beautifully well. They partnered together. And that prepared Haast then for taking over the directorship of China Inland Mission when Hudson Taylor retired. And so D.E. Haast is Hudson Taylor's successor. It helped that D.E. Haast also married into the Taylor family. So he marries the Broomall's daughter, Gertrude. So Geraldine Taylor's sister is who he marries. And he succeeded Hudson Taylor in the 1890s. And then you have two brothers, Arthur and Cecil Pohill Turner, who we don't know a whole lot about, but they were Anglicans, and they were in China. One of them was not there very long because he was involved in a riot and he was badly injured and had to go home. But those are the Cambridge Seven. One just little story about the Cambridge Seven. I can think of a lot to tell you, but I've only got a minute here. When they were on their farewell tour, they were working at one point with R.A. Torrey. And R.A. Torrey, at that point, Robert Torrey, was a pretty well-known Bible expositor and Bible teacher doing the conference circuit, and an early fundamentalist, wrote in the fundamentalist papers, some that were done in the early 1900s. And R.A. Torrey was going through a real spiritual crisis in his life. He was doing all this speaking and leading, and he was looked up to, but inwardly he was just very discouraged. When he came in contact with the Cambridge Seven, he was, especially Stanley Smith and C.T. Studd, he was just overwhelmed by their joy and their assurance and their energy. And so they were praying together, and he asked them, what's the secret? What do you guys have that I don't? I'm the one that's older and, the Bible expositor, but you've got something that I don't. And C.T. Studd looked back at R.A. Torrey and said, "Sir, I don't know. Are you fully surrendered to the Lord?" And that was like the prick that Torrey needed to reveal to him that there was a secret recess of his heart that he had not totally surrendered to the Lord, that he was keeping back to himself, a sin that he was indulging in. And that night he knew victory over that by the grace of God, and saw that as a real turning point, his meeting with the Cambridge Seven. If you'll just indulge me for one more minute or two, I brought a pile of books that I thought we would just kind of pause at this point, and I'll just tell you these books are in our library, and I'll just briefly introduce them to you in case anything that we've talked about in the last 6 weeks has piqued your interest. All right, so first of all, the first volume of Hudson Taylor's biography, The Growth of a Soul, which is the first 30 years of his life, and then the abridgment of that, which is Hudson Taylor's Spiritual Secret. These are in our library, tremendous, tremendous books. Here is the book on Pastor Xi, the biography of Pastor Xi. The foreword to this is written by Dr. Lloyd-Jones, who was glad to write the foreword for Geraldine Taylor about the life of Pastor Xi. I have a biography of Robert Morrison. That was all the way back our first week, but Robert Morrison by Marshall Broomall. And so I introduced you to Marshall today. Here is a book on the Cambridge Seven by John Pollock. Short read, only 125 pages on the story that I told you about them. Here's a book about David Hill. David Hill, the one who sponsored the essay contest where Pastor Xi was converted. And so there's a biography, full-length biography of him. the classic biography of C.T. Studd by his son-in-law, Norman Grubb. Got that here. Biography of D.E. Haast, which tells his whole life. Haast, I just wish I had more time. I got a story to tell about him, too, but I'm going to wait to do it some other time. But biography of Haast. If you're interested in W.C. Burns from last week, the chapter in Five Pioneer Missionaries, about 40 pages long, on W.C. Burns' life is in Five Pioneer Missionaries. And if the Broomalls and Amelia and Benjamin Broomall piqued your interest, here is a biography of the Broomalls by their son. It's called Heirs Together. Heirs Together. And the chapters go like this: the young man, the maiden, the lovers, the mother, the father, the man of action, the woman of prayer. Right? And it's just a biography of this couple, of his parents. And it talks about Amelia's life, then talks about Marshall's life, or then talks about Benjamin's life, then brings them together and their life together, heirs together of the grace of God. So those are all in our library. All can be checked out. There's 9 of them there, and there's plenty more where that came from, too. All right. Thank you for your patience. Let's prepare for our prayer time now.